way before that, I did actually played rugby in the streets between friends, where you find a plastic bottle, put in paper, then you just chuck it around. That is how everything started. And then eventually we started playing in primary school, and from primary school to high school, and then obviously starting to play professional.
That's amazing that those kids that play with you on the street then were watching you on TV for a decade, you know? I think that's really such a special
and
story.
You know what? Some of them were much better rugby players than me, you know? So yeah. I was just fortunate enough to get opportunity. I was at the right place, in the right area to get opportunity, and then they missed out on the opportunity. Hi, I'm South Africa, and this is the only time I run a Dylan like a park car.
He's so dangerous, Freddy Krueger has nightmares about him.
Hello and welcome to the Rugby Hive. I'm Dylan Stanford, and despite my South African accent, I was fortunate enough to play rugby for the United States on the Sevens World Series.
And I'm Robin McDougall, a former Canadian Sevens international. Back in my playing days, I went head-to-head against Dallin in the USA.
For several years, Robin has coached international Sevens for various countries, including Canada and Mexico. He's massively passionate about growing the game across the Americas through his McDougall Rugby programs at all levels. I'm currently a commentator for World Rugby, most recently broadcasting the Rugby World Cup in Japan, as well as the amazing Sevens World Series.
More than a decade later, we are teaming up to bring you insights from legendary players and coaches from around the world.
All legends have a story. The Rugby Hive podcast is here to share it.
Welcome to the Hive.
Oh, it's more dangerous than climate change.
Hello and welcome to season two of the Rugby Hive podcast. We're as tough as Nicolas Cage's face and we're back for more. 2020, of course, was a whirlwind for so many reasons, but we're grateful and thankful for all the support for Robin and myself and those that listened to the first 24 episodes of our pod. Like our playing days, we certainly got rounded like park cars, learning the ins and outs of the podcast world, but certainly enjoying the ride, having many laughs along the way. Season one, we had so many remarkable people not only answer our calls, but share their insights from either playing or coaching international rugby. We've covered the women's game, the men's game, sevens, 15s, and plenty of classic stories. And for me personally, I love the advice to the next generation for young girls and boys that is imparted by our guests. Plus them listing their favorite players, who they've played alongside, who they've played against. You know, we had season one, 24 episodes. Guests included Brian Habana, Nolly Waterman, Frank Bunce, Kayla Maleski, Osea Kalinasau, Mike Friday, Henry Paul, Tiana Penatani, Ari Guerrero, Ruben Samuel, Gary Gold, Gareth Reese, Joel Stransky, Mark Robertson, Chris Brown, Frankie Horn, Andy Friend, Alev Kelter, Nate Hirayama, Clark Laidlaw, Chris Wiles, Leslie McKenzie, Carl Tanana, Santiago Gomez Cora, John Tate, Ben Gollings, and Todd Clever. And one thing I discovered from season one is that Robin talks twice as much as me, a professional talker. I mean, who would have thought that, you slippery eel?
That's all part of coaching and how much coffee I drink.
Well, give us your summary or any highlights or favorite guests or moments from season one.
Selfishly, again, as a coach that's always trying to learn and grow, it's just about paying it forward, and everybody has a road to success, and it's not easy. And I think Nolly Waterman's had about 300 surgeries, and she's one of the most decorated athletes in the world. And even, you know, I think Brian Habana talking about how he met Francois Pinière at the 95 World Cup at a random field, and he gave him a piece of kit, like, you know, full circle. Like, how's that story?
Absolute epic. And that's the thing. We keep delivering these great guests that keep answering our calls. So we certainly love that. So let's fast forward. It's the year 2021. Give us an overview, Robin, some of the projects that you're currently involved in.
Yeah, well, COVID's obviously, you know, the pandemic has affected the whole world and obviously the rugby world. And for me, busy, you know, with our national team programs, and there's not a heck of a lot of athletes to coach or recruit when the pandemic hit. So in the mix, I've been continuing to try and get Canadian lumberjacks and farmers from across the colder part of the world to the West Coast here on Vancouver Island, where it's the hotbed of rugby in Canada and obviously hotter climate. And through that, I actually had a school district on Vancouver Island reach out to launch my second academy on Vancouver Island. So that's what I've been busy with. I got athletes from across Canada, interests around the world, and we even got a Texan coming up this fall. How about on your side?
I love that, my friend. Well, I'm still sporting the Dominican Republic shirt from a recent vaccinated vacation with the missus. But yeah, it's been really good for, you know, rugby here in the US opening up. And I know Canada has struggled initially, and that's why the Toronto Arrows are now based here in the US, one of the 12 sides playing Major League Rugby. So being involved, broadcasting that, commentating that, you know, almost every weekend, new structure because of COVID and also because of, you know, financial restrictions. They've done a remote model. So we fly either into a studio in Austin, Texas, or into Indianapolis, all the games remotely. So that's been a challenge. One, because you're calling a game from a small screen as opposed to being there live and seeing the greater picture. But the bonus is that you can call more games in a weekend and less travel, which I think has been great, you know. So outside of that, I've been working with the New England Free Jacks since October 2020 on content creation, doing a little coach's corner with Coach Ryan Martin, interviewing the players, getting some more things online there. And then lastly, consulting for Friends of British Council. And that's a partnership with Premiership Rugby, where we take coaches from the US and will be Canada as well for remarkable coach education experience. And because of restrictions due to getting in access to the players, we're postponing the trip to 2022. So we'll be taking the next group there. And hopefully, Robin, you'll be on that trip with us. So it'll be pretty exciting for that.
Yeah, and I think the World Series will be opening up soon post-Olympics. So that's really exciting. Can't wait to hear you calling the games.
That's right. I've got to get the one-liners ready. I've got to save a few for the World Series. That'll be super exciting. We'll see how that ends up going. And I know they've been pushing some of the tournaments back, but it looks like we could be in for a roller coaster finish to 2021. All right, let's get back to the Rugby Hive news. Massive news for us coming up this season too. We've got Wintergreen is our new title partner and sponsor. They're one of the leading warm-up support and recovery brands out there. Website is wintergreensport.com. And one of the best things I think about Wintergreen for me is the universal use for everyone. So from the person who's warming up for any sporting activity to those casual folks like me that go for a walk and pull a hamstring, it's really brilliant for those tight muscles out there. And what I've also liked is Verity has stolen all my magnesium salts that you put in the bath, you know, so she's certainly enjoying the recovery effects of that as well. I got one of their starter packs, which is four sensational products. And what they've done with us is they basically said we can give 15% off to our valuable listeners so they can get their products by June 18th and you use the code RugbyHive15%. And you get 15% off their amazing products. They partner with USA Rugby. They partner with Major League Rugby. They're a company out of South Africa founded by a few legends. And so they're just such a brilliant brand. And I know, Robin, you've been goose-tipping around the house and looking more lively with their products.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that I didn't probably need in my younger days, but I definitely do now. And I know those guys that are actually fast and powerful will definitely need it. So yeah, it's a wonderful product and they smell nice as well.
They do. Fans can visit wintergreensport.com. Make sure you get your 15% off there. Well, the news keeps coming in, the barnstorming news. Another one is we finally have our official merchandise range ready from World Rugby Shop. 46 Rugby Hive inspired products from the world's best sporting retail company. Robin, take it away, my friend.
Anywhere from fanny packs to visors. Next, like it's basically just setting Dallin up for success on the next trip. But they have absolutely everything. It's a clean, fresh brand line for the Rugby Hive. And I recommend you go there right away and get it while you last.
Yeah, that's right. Type Rugby Hive in the search bar, and that's at worldrugbyshop.com and order some of the stuff. You know, if your partner says you have enough rugby things, ignore what they say. Use our advice and just load up on the stuff. It looks very sleek and very clean. Still, the news keeps rolling in. Gilbert Rugby Canada is on board for another exciting season. One of our partners, and you can visit them at gilbertrugbycanada.com. And there, of course, we have World Rugby Shop, which is ships internationally, and it's obviously one of our North American partners. But specifically in Canada, we have you there, Robin, and we have Gilbert.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're really excited to launch our Gilbert custom Rugby Hive ball. That'll be live in June through Gilbert Rugby Canada for Canada and for the rest of the world to be available on World Rugby Shop as well. So it's a ball that Dallin can teach you how to pass with.
That's right. Exactly. Well, I've got Verity explained. So she'll do some of those little videos as well.
Please do.
target practice, you know. And then we have a brilliant new website, rugbyhive.com. That'll be our home base. Plus, we have the brilliant Karen Gasparino, known as the Gaz. She's joined us as our in-house for anything that requires pen and paper. She produces the amazing content through player and coach interviews. One of the best rugby journalists out there. And that is a brilliant partnership. And the Gaz comes through a connection through yourself, Robin.
Yeah, Karen's the sweetest pie, and we're thankful to have her. And like you said, she's one of the best writers in the world. And I don't think anybody loves the game more than her. And we needed somebody on board to keep us in line.
That's right, exactly. And then the hits keep coming. We're thrilled to partner with the Rugby Network to showcase the Hive to a larger local and international audience. So if you're watching this on the rugbynetwork.com, cheers, you sleek sensations. Really happy to be here for season 2. And you can catch us at Rugby Hive on Twitter and Facebook, at My Rugby Hive on Instagram, and of course our website, rugbyhive.com. It's time now for episode number 25, our first of season two. Season two kicking off for the Rugby Hive podcast. And we start with a South African legend, the player of the year for World Rugby on the Seven Series, a Blitzbok legend from South Africa who carries a brilliant name as well, Cecil Africa. Welcome to the pod, my friend.
Thank you guys for having me. It's a privilege to be here. Hopefully we will have some good and interesting chats.
We certainly will, my friend. So you're in sunny San Diego right now. So let's first start with your American adventure. How did it all come about?
Sunnyside, San Diego. This is actually the first day. It's actually Sunnyside. It's actually sunny. Most of the time it was a bit cloudy and a bit of drizzling. So it's good to see the sun out here in San Diego. How it started, it was actually... Actually, you can tell the story how it started. Me and my friend back home, the legend himself, Evan Jury, started chatting after I've stepped down from Sevens, and then he put me in contact with you. And then next thing I know, I'm in San Diego. So really, really grateful to be here. And hopefully I can add some value on the field and also off the field.
Well, I want to say, Cecil, it's the Sevens community. I know we keep talking about it, you know, on and off the field, like how important that is. And I think this is a really cool example. So Fabian messaged me for my details. Then you reached out. And Zach Test, who obviously I played with and you played against for many years, head coach, you know, co-head coach at San Diego Legion. So it was an easy connection, an easy offload. I didn't even need gloves for that. And in the corner you went.
And then it was under the post with the overload.
Exactly.
For me, it's quite interesting. My first season, younger guys, things are not going the way as we would have wished to. You know, obviously, a lot of the disruptive with COVID and the planning and the preparation and stuff like that. But we're getting there slowly but surely, and a couple of injuries and stuff like that. But hopefully, as the season goes on, we will get into our strides. But so far, so good. Enjoying my time in San Diego. I've been surfing every second day, catching a couple of waves. But yeah, now actually I'm lying. I'm making a joke. That's not me. That is Joe Peterson and Dean. Mia, those guys are the surfers. I'm just the guy just there cheering them up to go and catching a couple of waves.
Well, if you're like me, Cecil, you're on the shallow end of the pool. Whenever we're doing laps or stuff like that, I love the water coming from Cape Town, but just wasn't very good in it.
Precisely, you know, stay away from it. I'm on the ground where I'm in control, not in the water where the water is in control, you know. So I like to be in control.
Well, being born and raised on Vancouver Island here on the just north of you, Cecil, grew up on the water since I was like 5 days old. So in my first time I went to South Africa, we played in George. All the boys, like, so there's some of us that are from the West Coast, from the ocean, and the rest of them are from, you know, the middle of Canada where there's no ocean. So we go to those beautiful beaches outside of Wilderness, and all these Canadian boys, white and pasty, because they haven't seen the sun all winter, go running like deep into the waves, like shark infested waters and rollers for miles and miles and miles. And they're all making fun of me like, why aren't you coming in, Islander? Like, why aren't you coming in? They're making fun of me. And I'm like, when the guy from the ocean doesn't run into those swells, there's a reason.
There's a reason why. Yeah.
So like our head coach, Doug Tate at the time, and myself, we're just like hanging out like in the shallow stuff, and all these like guys from the prairies in Ontario are just swimming out to the open ocean. I'm like, bye-bye. Talk about beautiful part of the world. We're really interested for our viewers. We have a large, obviously, North American base. Dallin obviously covers the U.S., and I'm a Canadian. We got a strong listener base, but everybody's got eyes on the MLR right now. And how would you rate the, you know, playing in the MLR versus playing 15s in South Africa? And maybe you can touch on after, what's it like playing with some other South Africans on this side?
It's quite different compared to back home in South Africa, obviously. Where we South Africans, we play rugby from a young age, so we technically a bit better. But the guys, obviously, I've spoken to the guys about how was it last season and compared to this season. This season is much more physical than last season. So I would say the physicality is up there, but the intensity is not as high as maybe pro rugby or Currie Cup. But the physicality is up there. But I believe to 3 years from now, then the MLR will be a force to be reckoned with, because what the reinforcements, guys coming in, sharing their knowledge and speeding up the process. And it's really, really, really good to play with the guys like Joe Peterson, Bjorn Masson, guys I've never played with. And it's quite easily how we find each other. I guess it's easier because we more or less understand the game because of the type of style that we want to play, running type of game. So it's quite easier to connect and interact with each other. So yeah, it's quite good. Joe is actually a massive influence in the way we want to play. He's got massive knowledge and sharing with us. It's a real privilege to play alongside him and Bjorn Masson.
And then Cecil, I want to touch on then, let's go all the way back, you know, to your childhood, you know, in South Africa. Tell us a bit about when you were younger, growing up, and outside of rugby, what kind of sports did you get up?
In the township where I grew up called Missionville in Port Elizabeth, if it was soccer season, then we'll play soccer. If it was cricket season, we'll play cricket. If it was rugby season, we will play rugby. So it will be like this street against that street, and that is how I actually fall in love with rugby, and it was very competitive. So that is where the love for rugby started at a young age, because I got exposed to it like on a daily basis everywhere. If there's an open patch of grass or ground, you'll see a couple of kids playing 3-on-3, 4-on-4, 2-on-2, 1-on-1, you know? And that is how I've fallen in love with the game. And still today, when I go back home and then the guys are playing, and then ask myself, did you want to play? I'm like, no, guys, I don't want to play with you guys. You guys are going to make me look bad, you know. And that is how I've got exposed to rugby. And rugby was more like an escape for me, you know, because of there was a form where I can like express myself, because I stuttered a lot and I was quite shy to interact with people. But when I played rugby, that was like just me, like just like freeing myself, you know, where I can just say yes, no, pass, you know. Then I don't have to make conversation, because I was so shy because of I'm stuttering, because where I grew up, the guys like to make fun of you, whether you've got a big head or something funny. But that also teaches you to, when you're adult, just to push through, you know, subconsciously that really helps you to become a strong person at the end of the day.
And can you go back? Do you remember your first rugby game you ever played, and where was it?
My first rugby game is at primary school. I was 12 years old, I remember, because the school that I went to, we will train, but we will never have competition to play against, because our school wasn't as popular, or there wasn't school that really wanted to play against us, because our school wasn't as popular or wasn't known as rugby. And then, but we used to train like every single year, but we never play a game. But in 2000, yes, it was my first rugby game for my primary school, and I actually scored a hat-trick in that game, which were quite funny. And and that is where everything started. But way before that, I did actually play rugby in the streets between friends, where you find a plastic bottle, put in paper, then you just chuck it around. That is how everything started. And then eventually we started playing in primary school, and from primary school to high school, and then obviously starting to play professional.
That's amazing. Those kids that play with you on the street, then were watching you on TV for a decade, you know? I think that's really such a special
and
story.
You know what? Some of them were much better rugby players than me, you know? So yeah. I was just fortunate enough to get opportunity. I was at the right place, in the right area to get opportunity. And then they missed out on the opportunity.
And speaking of those opportunities, exactly, as you said, you know, you made the South African school side, and that's a huge feat. And then South Africa under 20, that is a prestigious group to make in Rugby Mad South Africa, you know. So what was it like playing at that level with the best in the country? And do you remember some of the names of those players that went through to represent the Springboks?
You know, Dylan, like I represented SA schools in South Africa under 20, but I'm coming from a small union. For me, it was something massive, you know, to be in the SA schools and to be at a Junior World Cup and play like guys like Robert Iverson, Francois Hougat, Steven Watermeyer, Stefan Dippenaar, Lionel Mapu, Nick Costa. Those are all of the guys that is playing for the Cheetahs, Stormers, Bulls or whatsoever. And I'm this young guy playing for a first division union, which is the Griffins, you know. And it was just awesome to see how those guys talk about the game, where I was limited in terms of like exposure, which if it's nutrition or is it the knowledge or recovery or stuff like that. Like, I don't know. I just know I need to go train, go back, go relax, sleep or whatsoever, where those guys will do recovery, ice, eat right. And I didn't know that. You know, that's why guys like Frans Hoogh lined them up with those guys when we went on and became Springboks. We had a really, 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 really good back line. We had Frans Hoogh as our 9, Frans Brummer as our 10, Robert Iversen our 12, Stefan Watermeer our 13. Two wings was Lionel Mapu and Stefan Depena and Walton Peterson. Walton Peterson was outstanding rugby player, very physical, good runner of the ball. Just said that he went that tragic of a car accident and he couldn't really fulfill his full potential. But those were the guys I've played with. And also you have guys like Diego Divenage was also in that team. So guys in that team who ended up becoming Springboks was Lionel Mapu and Frans Hoogh.
Yeah, some talented players in that squad, man. Mm-hmm. Epic.
Yeah, very, very, very talented players.
And tell us about the period in your life with the Griffins. You played almost 50 times for them, a side that competes in the Currie Cup and Rugby Challenge tournaments. Were you happy playing 15s? And how did the doors open for you in 7s?
The Griffins, they were a team who really gave me the opportunity from under 18, played seniors when I was 18 years old, and really, really, really enjoyed my rugby down there at the in the Northern Free State. And I was fortunate enough to win the first division with guys like Howard Noble, Ashley Johnson, Jonathan McQuinn, and those guys. And then I was just playing. I was just being a kid, just enjoying and expressing myself. And then Coach Daniel Vanis, I've played the Emerging Springboks Sevens. That's like the development program. And then Coach Daniel Vanis spotted me. And then I went to Kenya, then I played in that Safari Sevens tournament. And then my first year, I was playing the tournament. And then the second year, I was outstanding again. And that is where Coach Paul Drew spotted me. And then I've only got invited to the camp 2008-09 season. And then after that, then they asked me, Cecil, do you want to stay here? And I'm like, yes. In that same time, I got the offer from the Cheetahs in the Sevens. And so then I'm like, no, I'm going to the Sevens because this is, I felt like this is something I want to specialize in. And this is where I felt appreciated. This is where the people really welcomed me. And then I guess the rest was history, and that is where everything started.
In many ways, you embody the Rugby High because you are a worker bee. You know, you're nonstop. And also, you'll sting people if they don't watch out. So that's why Sevens is your game. Rob and I both played, but just as rugby fans, you know, your name comes up, one of the greatest Sevens players of all time. Let's talk about that entry, right? So you were in the broader squad 2008, 2009, and that's the year South Africa, for the very first time, won the Sevens title, normally dominated by New Zealand, who'd won, you know, 8 out of 9 years. So what was that like in South Africa? You know, even though you weren't playing, as you said, on the series currently yet, but did that put Sevens on the map?
You know, like that reason why I wasn't playing, because I was competing against guys like Paul Delport, Vuyo Zangma, Remford Dazel, Zwan Listix, Gio Eplon. You know, I'm like, I've got to learn as much as possible. So the day these guys step away, I need to make sure that I make use of this opportunity. So I was stealing a lot by just the way they do things and just trying to understand the game and get clarity of what is my role, where can I fit in once they leave the system. I guess that year was the first year when South Africa won the World Series. After that, then the people really started to acknowledge Sevens, you know, started to follow the game, because back home people didn't really follow Sevens as they're following it now. But we sit as a group and speak about what we want to achieve and where we want to take Springbok Sevens. And we want the people to really fall in love with the game of Sevens and really see the value in the manner we play, you know. So back home, the people was really stoked, because I think that year we won the World Series. It was the year after we won the World Cup. That same year, 2009, we won the British and Irish Lions too, in a tri-nation. So all of those trophies were back in South Africa. So everybody was happy. And so it was a good overall year for South African rugby. So everybody was stoked about it.
Yeah, lots of trophies to drink out of. There was
a yes, most definitely.
You know, mentioned all those brilliant names of players that came before you. Those players obviously rounded Robin and myself like parked cars in the series. And then, of course, the great thing about South African Sevens team is that there is a better player coming through every single year, type thing, you know. And so we played against you. I want to say it was 2009, 2010, around about that era. I also remember Neil Powell, who had a bit of gray hair back then. And I remember thinking, oh, you know, I thought he was on the coaching staff back then, but he's actually playing. So can you just talk about, you know, what made him a good teammate, which would then transfer into him becoming a brilliant coach?
I was quite fortunate enough to really play with a bunch of good leaders. And Coach Neil, he was in the back end of his career, a really, really, really passionate Springbok Sevens player, person. He loves it out the way he talks, the way he breathes it. He was actually much more stricter player than he was a coach, because he was so passionate and young. He just wanted us to be proud of who we are and what we were. And he really just wanted us to make sure that we go there and do our utmost best. I didn't really play much tournaments with him as a player. But when he was there, you would felt like his leadership, his presence, a lot of wisdom and knowledge about the game. And really guided us well those times when he was part of the team.
And outside of your record 345 matches on the World Series, you won two major medals in your career. First up, tell us a bit about your memories at the 2014 Commonwealth Games in Glasgow and what that experience was like.
That is one of my highlights in my career, 2014, especially the Commonwealth Games. The reasoning is because I was a flag bearer for South Africa at the Commonwealth Games. That is one of my highlights in my career, and just going out there, waving our flag, just being, you know, it felt like a kid. And after walking through, and then we took our seats and the boys were excited. Hey, guys, come, let's go out there and really and enjoy each other's company. But what in saying that, it was a very, 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 very rough camp leading up to the tournament. Guys who was itching to play, guys got frustrated with each other because the training was intense. I think Cornel Hendricks and Werner Kok almost had a fight, but Coach Neil had to separate them. And then the one day we were coming from training, and then something happened in a meeting, and then Cornel chirped Frankie, and then Frankie told Cornel, "Listen, please get out of my way before I hit you." And I knew personally, knew, hey, this is going to be a good week for us as a team, not. On the field, just in the manner, the guys is so aggressive and want to play that they want to take it out onto each other. And then it really showed out there on the field once we hit the park, the guys were physical, the guys were really working hard for each other. Guys went out there and really dig deep for each other. And we managed to be the first team actually to beat New Zealand in a Commonwealth Games competition. So that was actually something totally, totally, totally special for us as a team.
I went to the 06 Commonwealth Games in Melbourne, Australia, and we went through to the top eight, beat Scotland at the death. But yeah, we lost to New Zealand in the cup quarters, and then we lost to South Africa in the plate semis. So we were on the receiving end of those. So no, that's good to break it up. And those multi-sport games are so much fun. I've been to five, one as a player and four as a coach. And one thing I always say to athletes everywhere is we train and we love the sport, but when I look back on any of my memories, it's all about the people, the places and the things. And and just the athletes' village for me was so special. As we move ahead to the Rio 2016 Olympic Games, the first time rugby sevens debuted, what was that like for you?
Man, I'd like to talk about that. I get emotional about that tournament. Rio Olympics was truly special for me. But man, that's like the best of the best under one roof around the world, whether it's tennis, whether it's rugby, whether it's track and field, weightlifting, you know. And you could see the guys who are there who would say, "Listen, I'm just an Olympian." And then your guys, you will see like that these guys are here to medal. Those guys, you don't see. You only see them when it's competition time. And there's a lot of distractions, you know, and if you're not focused, then you can lose sight of where you want to go as a team, because you go into the dining hall, there's like lots of Coke, Sprites. You can take whatever you want to, you know, and that is stuff that we're not supposed to back home. Now you can go eat at 9, you can go eat at 11, you can go eat at 12, you can go eat at 3. So there's constantly food. So you got to stand back and say, listen, I'm not here. I want to eat, but I'll only need when I need to, not when I want to, you know, because those are the stuff that you can lose track of. But in terms of our performance, our preparation was really, 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 really good. We just had a slow start to the tournament. I think we played up Spain first, and then we struggled in that first half, but we managed to come out with a win. And then the second game, we played the Frenchies, and we also beat them. And then we lost our last pool game against Australia because they had to win us to make sure that they're in a cup quarterfinals. And then they beat us, and then we played them again after that in the quarterfinals. And then we went out to play in the semifinals against Great Britain, and we lost. We had about five opportunities to make sure we could win that game, and that's the margins, you know. If you only get so much opportunities per game, and if you don't make use of those opportunities, it won't come again, and then you might come out on top or you might come out at the bottom. And unfortunately, we lost that game 7-5. Then we went out to play Japan in a bronze medal match, and then we were outstanding in that game again. But overall, I've never, since we lost that game against Great Britain, I've never watched that game again after that. I don't have the courage to watch that semifinals over again, because I'm going to cry, because I really know how hard we really worked in to get to that opportunity, to make sure that we give ourselves a best opportunity to maybe to come out with a gold medal. We as a team, we had our opportunities, but we couldn't capitalize on those opportunities. But hopefully this year we'll have another opportunity and can come back with a gold medal.
And Cecil, sevens is such a tricky one, as we know. I mean, a score of 7-5, it's so tight. You had opportunities, could have gone either way type thing. But you're also right about, you know, not having to go to watch that, because you experienced it, you know, was like. And a lot of times, you know, people use moments like that as their bigger inspiration as opposed to winning something, right? So, yes. You know, and that leads me to my next point. For example, in 2017 and 2018, you made South Africans beam with pride, right? Around the globe, you guys won back-to-back HSBC World Rugby 7 Series titles. What would you consider, you know, your success in those 2 years compared to previous seasons with the Blitzbox side?
I would say it's just that our depth of our squad and the continuity within our squad. And I also believe we paid our school fees before, where I think there were three seasons where we came second consecutively. We finished second every single time, but we were in the lead, and in the back end of the World Series, then we'll fall short. So then we were just trying to figure out why we will stay. Sometimes we will have a good start, and then in the middle of the season, we will be bad. And then at the end, we will be outstanding. And then the next season, we have a bad start, but then at the end of the season, we will be outstanding. So I guess it's us understanding where we are as men, where we are as individuals, and what's going to take for us to make sure that we are successful. And obviously, our coaching staff is outstanding. Coach Neil, Alan Temple-Jones that time, Hugh Everson, Ramford Dazel, those guys back on the sound really helped us to make sure that we could go out there and make sure that we make each other proud and our country proud, you know, because we want the people to, when they look at us, when we play, we want to give them hope and inspiration in the manner we play. So that is what we stand for. And hopefully we did that over these years. And hopefully we will continue to do that as a Springbok Sevens, you know. So I believe it was really working hard for each other and be hard on each other to understand. It's not about you being negative towards me. It's about making sure that we as a system be successful. Say, Sizzle, hey, that's a bad kick. Like Kyle Brown will tell me, hey, Sizzle, that's a bad kick, man. You don't give me opportunity to contest, then I don't get upset. I understand what he's trying to do. I want to get the best out of him, and he needs to make sure that I give him the best so that I can get the best version out of Carl Brown. It's also understanding your teammates' strengths and weaknesses. For argument's sake, we will have somewhere we will have a scrum. Normally, when Carl is okay, he'll tell me, Sizzle, I'll go clean. Then you will take 9, because he knew he was a better cleaner than me. And I'm a better passer than him. Not that he can't pass, just that I can clean, but just that he's better in it than me. You know, stuff like that. those small detail stuff that make sure that we get the best out of each other with each other's skills and understanding each other's strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, exactly. Putting people in the right position to be successful. Like we spoke to Frankie, and we said to Frankie, we've never seen him pass the ball, but he doesn't need to pass the ball, right? Because he's the Buffalo.
He doesn't need to pass the ball. He doesn't need to pass the ball. He's just gotta make sure that he gives us momentum, and then we will take it from there. You know. Yeah, but I guess also over these years, Frankie also needed to adjust his game because everybody knew when Frankie get the ball, he's gonna carry it, and then they were sending 2-3 guys and just smashing. And then Frankie took ownership and worked on his footwork just to make sure he's getting half tackle and make sure he gets offload away, just to not to be one dimensional, but just to manipulate the defenders to make sure that he can last his career the way he did eventually.
Now, we have to put you on the spot. I know these are the questions you've been dreading because, you know, to list any players means you leave out other players. But again, this is just for fun. This is not going to be published. So I want to ask you, South Africans who you've played alongside over the years, which seven make your all-time dream team?
What's the criteria?
So in your 10 years or 11 years that you played on the series, your favorite players.
Does it have to be seven? Can it be more than seven?
Yes, it can be more than seven. You can mention more than seven. So just a group of players that you enjoyed playing alongside. And if you name every single player you played with, that won't count.
Man, you're putting me on the spot right here, man. can I name 12 guys?
Yes, absolutely.
Sure, let me see you forwards. I must think nicely now. I was fortunate enough to play with guys like Kompombioso. I've only played a season with him, and there was a tough season for us back in 2009-10. So I didn't really got opportunity to, how can I put this now, to see the best of play with Kompombioso when he was at his best, because there were a couple of tournaments he was out. So I've played about 6 tournaments with him. That's why I ask what's the criteria. And then there were guys I played with like 2 tournaments, and those guys were outstanding, you know. So let me say Karas Dry, Tamagaba, Kyle Brown, Philip Sneyman, Frankie Owen. if I have to go to the backs, Brenko de Pria, sweeper, he's a solid sweeper. Ervis is very low, you know, when it comes to defense, outstanding DD defender, a great kicker, outstanding rugby player. And I moved to centers.
You're skipping Flyhaus because that's where you are.
No, I'm not selecting myself. I'm stepping away. I've played with Fabian only 2 tournaments, you know, and that was like he haven't played sevens for about like 5 years, but we knew what Fabian could do, you know. So I'm not gonna put him in that team. I'm not saying he's not part of. Your question is the guys I've played with over these years. I'll come back to the 10s. Let me go to 12s. Cornel Hendricks and Steven Hunt. My favorite winger that I've played with was Sampi Mastery, just because he was a better rugby player than Siabello at that time, because Siabello was a late developer. Siabello only really played rugby when he was about like 18, 19 years old. Sampi Mastery was a great finisher. He knew how to play with his speed and a good rugby IQ than Sampi and Siabello. And then number 10, Mzwanele Sticks.
There it is. Stick. Yes. Oh, my God. What a legend. Robin and I were talking before this call about Stick's amazing drop kick during, off the line out steal.
In Dubai against Fiji.
Exactly. Yeah. Against Fiji. Yeah. Unbelievable player.
Kick the convert in extra time to through to overtime. And then the blitz box steal the line out. One pass, two pass, and just nails a 47-meter drop goal.
Right through the middle. And then they beat England in the finals.
And I was watching in Canada. It was probably like 4 a.m. And I had my uncle visiting from the West Coast. He was in the room next door. I was screaming at the top of my lungs. He thought there was a fire or something. I was just losing my mind watching that kick. It was the best.
And now to put you even more on the spot, of course, because you've played against so many legends from 2009 to 2020. Your all-time dream team, these are players you've played against. Okay, so no one on your side can be selected. You can give me as many names or as few names as you want, but I would like to hear from you who you thought are respected most from the opposition.
No Springboks, no Blitzboks.
No Blitzboks.
That's unfair. Number one, Damu Damu, who played for England. Sure, that man was lethal. Like physical, tall, strong, good footwork, area skills was outstanding. And I would go with the Alafortifao Saliba. Oh man, that back in 2010, that man was destroying everybody. Then I'll go with Mr. Consistent from New Zealand, Tom Mickelson. When it comes to nines, it's the guys I've played against, Wally Mai, Tomas Ikama, Tom Mitchell, Jerry Tuai, James Tenad. Oh man, you put me on the spot. I'll go with Tomasi. With Tomasi Kama, just like the calmness he showed, like under pressure, felt like he had a lot of time on the ball. And when he was on form, then New Zealand was outstanding. If you shut Tomasi Kama down, then New Zealand is shut down.
And we said you can't mention our names. So like we took our names out of it, right? Just so we want to clarify.
Yes. Obviously. Yeah. Number 10 is England legend. I have to go with Ben Gollings. You know, that guy, kickoffs outstanding. Accurate. If there's a conversion, need to draw the game or win the game, you'll guarantee you will slot it over. Centers. There was one season where was the guy's name? Charles Peartau actually played for New Zealand. He had an outstanding season, but I have to go with Vermeer Vakatawa. Man, that guy's footwork, his strength, offload, he's lethal. You will if you have that guy in the midfield. You'll always have go forward ball opportunity. 9 out of 10 times, you're gonna score. You're gonna get opportunity to score a try. The guy that's gonna make sure that you finish those opportunities. We had great finishes over these years. I played against guys like Frank Gelai, Michele Pessimino, Dan Norton, even Sir Owen Star was also a great finisher. And what's the guy's name I played against once? Tom Vandel. He was, that man was lethal. Why do you have to ask this type of
questions? No, Cecil, these are brilliant names from all the years and eye flashbacks when you talk about, you know, the fast and levers of
like,
the world.
Even like Collins and Jera. I'm going with my brother, Collins and Jera.
So good. And he's another player that lasted for, you know, 10 years.
I have to put someone from Africa. If there's no South African, then it definitely has to be Collins in general, you know? But so, man, like even a guy like Perry Baker also, it's amazing to see how that guy have developed since he came on the scene, like how his contact skills, his running skills, his tackle technique, his aerial skills. It's amazing to see how that guy have developed over the years. It's amazing to see.
Yeah, I love that team that you put together. What are we going to do is we're going to put all our guests with their top seven, their seven-a-side team. We'll put them down on a little image and we'll get the fans to vote to see who their favorite side is because there's so many good names there. I mean, besides Robin getting rounded by most of those players, I could run over by most of them as well. So.
Man, there's some names I've even left out there. A guy like Lolo Louis also, you know? That guy was amazing and a guy like Trevor Reiners. Wally Mai was one of my favorite players, or still is. Just the communication of that guy, how he directs the defense and the attack. I just used to sit in a stand and just like look at that guy. How he like, it's almost like he's a conductor. He just talks for the whole 14 minutes. That man, it's you just hear his voice, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, man, I need to be like that guy one day, you know? Just to make sure that everybody understands where we're going, what we need to do, it makes everybody's job so much easier.
I got an opportunity to play against you, Ali Mai, as well, and I've shared this story a number of times, but it took me about 7 years, Cecil, before I got selected for Canada, so I got cut for 7 years. So by the time I got on the big bus to Dubai, I'd known every player and I'd, you know, done my homework right. And then in South Africa, I played against Samoa for the first time and I'd been fearing that part. But we had like a 5 meter scrum and we got wheeled, of course, and he just looked at me, kind of winked at me and just scored under the post. And he was kind of like, welcome to the show, young man. But just all class and just full control. And then I really liked Pessimino as well. He was world class in his time, one of the best finishers for sure.
You guys are taking me back now down memory lane.
It's good. All right, well, we'll move on here. So you've toured the world, obviously, extensively. Who would you list as some of your favorite team jokers or pranksters on tour? Who are your craziest roommates?
You know what? I wasn't fortunate enough to have, like, crazy roommates. I was fortunate enough to room with Carl Brown for about, like, 8 seasons. And there, in that room, we strict, you know? But the pranksters in our team is Frankie Owen and Chris Dry. And then we have the silent assassin, Philip Snyman. That guy, no one would think it will be him, but it is him. If there's a prank, everybody would run to Frankie and say, Frankie, why did you do this to me? Why did you do that to me? Because that is what Frankie does. Then in the meantime, it's not Frankie, then it's Philip. And then Philip just sits there straight face like, I didn't do anything. But in the meantime, the whole time it was him. The one time... and also our physio, Hugh Everson, after the London tournament, then Karas Dry normally stays back because his sister stays in London. And then our physio took blue cheese and then he chucked it in Karas Dry's big bag. When Karas Dry went to his sister, then he opened his bag and then his all of his clothes were smelly and that man was upset. He was bleak. And then the following season, when he came back in our camp and then he told Mr. Yu, our first year, I'm going to get you back. And I think that following year, then someone was making coffee for the management. And then one of the players took 2 sleeping tablets and chucked it in a coffee and gave it to you and then drank it. And that man was on the way to training. He was nodding the whole way there and back. Man, there's some good stories. Like back in 2014, at the Commonwealth Games, Frankie Owen turned around his own bed, throw out his own clothes just to get to Chris and blame Chris. Why are you doing this to me? But it was himself. And just to get into Chris's room and toss his bed around and all of his clothes. That guy. There's Frankie Owen for you.
Yeah. What a genius. Awesome. So what would be your favorite tournament you've ever played in or won? That's a tough question, I know, but we're holding you to it. Just one.
The favorite tournament I've played was 2011 Hong Kong. Everything that tournament was just magical. I don't know why. Everything just felt good. And I was fortunate enough to be the first African to actually win a player of the tournament at Hong Kong Sevens that year. And we lost to Fiji in the quarterfinals in overtime. We went on winning the plate tournament. But in saying that, in our first game against Spain, we lost 2 players, Paul Jordan and Bernardo Buerta. So for the rest of the tournament, we only had 10 players. And that sevens for you, you know. You just have to buy the bullet. And that is the season where a guy like Chocho Umbavane made his debut. And then he was... outstanding.
And then I want to follow up as well, because you know there's so much knowledge on the Sevens World Series and you've seen it intimately for, you know, more than a decade. So Cecil, what would you say the differences on and off the field if you compare when you started in 2009 to when you finished recently?
Sure, there's a lot of have changed massively. Obviously, like the personnel, the competitiveness between the teams. A lot of teams are doing now live coding, analyzing the opposition. And obviously, the food is much better now. And the destinations is also much better. And there's a massive following base to when I started now. So there's a lot of people coming out to watch the tournaments actually live. So which makes it more competitive. It wasn't as way back then where New Zealand used to like dominate the World Series. So any team can beat any team now on any given day if you don't pitch up. So it's very, really, really, really competitive. It's a healthy competition. It just shows you how the game have changed over the years, the way the teams have played side to side. Teams are playing more direct. It's just Fiji that is playing Fiji rugby, you know, offload. Then you get England who plays direct with offload. Then you get Scotland who plays wide back into the pullback, just like USA. but you can still see like how the game has evolved from way back to now in terms of the strategies. You get teams, we've got four different ways that they attack against different teams, depending on who you're playing, strategy defensive-wise. Like, we've got a different way when we played against New Zealand, got a different way when we played against Australia. We have a different type of style when we play against Fiji defensively and attacking-wise, or whether it's Canada or USA or Kenya, because all of them bring something different. So you got to make sure that you take their strengths away and expose their weaknesses. Give them A, let them feed off A, and then come next game when you play them again, and you give them B because they think you're going to do A. So it's a human chess game, because the coaches is trying to outthink the other coaches, and we try and outthink the other players. But yeah, the game have changed in a lot of ways, even the way the guys eat recovery and stuff like that, where the guys used to go out and get smashed a lot, where some of the guys, they don't really do that anymore because they know their body needs to recover to make sure when they get the next opportunity to play that they on their peak performance. But it's good, obviously, because it's an Olympic sport and everybody wants to be Olympian and win a medal at Olympics, you know. And I believe the game is still going to grow. You're going to see 4 years from now, Russia is going to be back. Germany is going to be back. Those guys are going to fight to get a spot on the World Series.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, all the changes. It's great, you know, for us in North America to see USA so competitive. And that's kind of why Charlie Sheen never made the team, because he was always out on the big night.
Yeah, USA is one of those teams who really, like, understand their strengths and their weaknesses. But in saying that, also is also, like, the continuity in terms of, like, team selection and staff and the guys really understanding the game and understand what they need to do to make sure they can win a tournament, you know? And with that speed outside Perry Baker and Callum Ellis, man, it's difficult to stop those guys once they get onto the front foot. So you got to make sure that you shut them down. I think USA is one of the most improved teams on the World Series 6 years.
Some of the, you know, factors going from, you know, places like South Africa where it was in George, where I played a few times, now to Cape Town, sold out, to
Port Elizabeth. Port Elizabeth was the best one, yes.
I didn't get to go to it either, so you would know, but the Cape Town boy here might contest. And then obviously, like, as a Canadian, I never would have thought we would have ever hosted a World Series. Like, I dreamt about it, but I never would have thought.
It's my best venue, eh? That's one of my best venues, Vancouver. Man, like, it's just a very, very beautiful city. Just super cold. Great, great, great coffee shops. Great coffee shops.
It's the warmest city in Canada as well.
Apparently, and I'm like, if this is the warmest city in Canada, then I don't want to go anywhere else. But it's just amazing how much South African supporters is there in Vancouver, you know. It feels like when we play there, we are at home, you know. It's just amazing to see 30,000-40,000 people come out and support Rugby Sevens. It just shows you how the game have grown over these years, and how people is following Rugby Sevens because of the excitement of Sevens in general. You know, you're always on the edge, and there's always action. There's always a try going to be scored within the next 50 seconds, you know. And then you get a team like Japan who beats, say, maybe Fiji, or Kenya beats South Africa, or Zimbabwe beat this team, you know. That is what the people is coming to see. And I guess most of the supporters is coming out to have some beers. But still, the stadiums are packed.
I was just going
to
say, like, across the road is Rogers Arena, and that's where the Vancouver Canucks NHL team plays. And I saw the Canucks, like, when I lived in Vancouver, I'd go to the odd game, and it would be, I mean, even when it was fairly sold out, it would be boring. Like, the Canucks would score, people, they turn on the horns, but it's not really the same thing. And it's an ice hockey culture. But yes, then you go to the Rugby Sevens, and we may not have that rich rugby history, but that culture, just because of the World Series and the culture that comes along with it and the excitement, like you're saying, the fans are engaged. They may not even, half of them may not even know what's going on, but they, you know, they know there's something happening. And
they know there's something happening. Yeah. You know, there's rugby, when there's rugby and beer and fun, people are happy, man. You know, so it's nice to see like different nationalities, not the different cultures come together and just be happy for that weekend, man. It's beautiful to see and truly special to be part of something like that and quite unique.
Wonderful. My last question for you, and then Dallin's going to bring it home, but you're a rugby man after my own heart. Being a small guy myself, you were one of the smallest, but definitely one of the deadliest players that's ever played on the World 7 stage.
Thanks, man.
What advice would you give to any boys and girls that also are smaller and their teammates that have big dreams?
It's understanding your strength, you know, and keep on working on your strengths and understanding what your weaknesses is and trying to improve on those weaknesses and acknowledge it and say, listen, I can't pass this at all. I am small, you know, so everybody is going to run at me. So what can I do to make sure that I make my tackles? In necessarily, it doesn't have to be like dominant hits, but if I have 5 tackle attempts, I need to make all 5 of their tackle attempts, you know. So make sure that you understand who you're defending. For arguments like, if I know I defend a guy like Dan Norton, that man can go around me. He can step me inside. He can chip the ball. So that's too many options. So I got to make sure that I give him one option where I know a guy like, say, Andrew Amonde, for argument's sake, I know he's not going to step. He's going to come straight. So I'm not saying this is easy, but he only has one option. He's going to run over me, you know? So it's understanding who you're defending and what is their strengths and what is your strengths to make sure that you can make that tackle on that person. Hopefully it makes sense what I'm saying. But yeah, it's just back your own ability and go there and express yourself at the end of the day. And just make sure that you give your utmost best every single time you get an opportunity to play.
That's awesome advice for the Rugby High followers. And again, you know, being such a small body yourself, it's Branko Dupree, a good example with your dreadlocks flying everywhere, but still making those tackles. And you know, I thought I was small and Robin was small too, but you guys obviously smashing the big Fijians where we just got run over most times. So, you know, obviously a brilliant advice there. And then let's talk about life after sevens. Your final question for you here is rugby coffee. Robin's body is made up of 95% coffee, 5% water. how did you come up with the business and who's involved? And give us a story there, please.
This is actually a fun story. Myself, Carl and Philip, we're quite blessed to travel the world and see the beautiful cities and taste the different coffees around the world, whether it's Dubai, Sydney, Vancouver, London, you know, all taste all the different coffee and we really love coffee. So and coffee is a form of social, you know, just hey, let's go for coffee and have a chat, you know. And coffee's always gonna be around.
How did you come up with the business and who's involved? And give us a story there, please.
That is how we really born as Springbok Sevens. The whole team will go out for coffee and then we just sit and have a chat. And then this one evening, Philip Snyman was sending me a message around about 10:30 at night. Well, big things is about to happen. And I'm like, what? Why is he sending me this message this time of the night? So now I'm replying, what? Then he tells me, wait till tomorrow. I'm like, Philip, come on, man. You can't do that. You can't do that. He's like, wait till tomorrow. Then I roll around, I'm like, this guy. Anyway, eventually I fall asleep. Next day, I even drove past my coffee stop. I normally do like, this is what I do when I go to training. I'll get in my car, drive, have a coffee or buy a coffee, go to training. I even drove past a coffee shop straight to Philip. I'm listening. What's it? What's the big thing to happen? Then he said, pal, I met this guy. He's a coffee roaster. He wants to meet us and he knows we love coffee and maybe he wants to roast for us. And then that is how it started. And we joked around about it. And then eventually we asked him to roast for us and then he roasted. And then we tasted it. We had like 5 cuppings before we initially started to settle down on a blend because we wanted everybody to... We were discussing about what blend we're going to do and what it needs to taste like. And then we decided we can't do something that we like. We must get something that everybody is going to like, you know, to make sure that they enjoy our coffee. And then and that is how the journey started. It was a hobby for us. And then eventually we say, guys, if we want to make this thing serious, then we need to go into business. And then that's how it started as a hobby. But now it's a business. The coffee company is called 18 Coffee. We've got four different blends. We've got a pilot, and we've got a single origin, which is Colombia, Colamigo. Then we have an all African blend, Safari Express, an Africa blend. And then we have a Sportsnaya, Biscuits of Best Friend. That is our business in a nutshell.
And remind us of exactly who's in it and their jersey numbers and why it adds up to 18.
Oh,
do the numbers.
The reason why it's called 18 is our jersey numbers. Philip Snyman was jersey number 2, Carl Brown jersey number 6, and myself was jersey number 10. And we're the most kept players in those jerseys. And don't quote me on this, but a perfect espresso shot is 18 grams. So I'm just saying, you know, that's why it's 18 of the numbers. So it's Philip Snyman, jersey number 2, Carl Brown, jersey number 6, and South Africa, jersey number 10. And that's why our name is 18 Coffee.
Beautiful. We won't quote you. We're just going to show this video and let it play. Well, we can't wait to try it, my friend. That's going to be epic. And I want to say a huge thank you from Rob and myself for being on the Rugby Hive. Not often you get a player that scored, you know, 1,462 points.
Man.
Top scorer for South Africa, 179 tries on the series. It's been an honor commentating you on the series and now in Major League Rugby as well. So you're still going strong, still letting the locks fly, more looser than Homer Simpson's dietitian.
Thank you guys for having me on the show. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it and hopefully I did answer the questions that you guys wanted. But we can talk again on selecting our dream team over these years and get a different views and reasoning why. I like the talks. I like those types of conversations because everybody sees things differently, you know. It really teaches me also a lot about the game and also understanding a lot about rugby just in general, why certain guys select certain players.
Yeah, I think you're right, Cecil. It's fascinating to hear from, you know, our different guests who they choose. And we had Nate Terryama on long ago. And, you know, when he came onto the scene, Serevi was still playing. So he went against Serevi. So it all depends which era you were part of.
And, yes.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. You know, so absolutely yes. Brilliant, my friend.
Goeiedag, ek is South Africa and you luister aan Rugby Hive.
Thank you,
guys. Thanks.
Cheers, star.
Beautiful ball over the top. Yes, Steffo!
Thank you for listening, you sleek sensations.
If you haven't already, please subscribe to Rugby Hive Podcast and catch us on all the socials at Rugby Hive.
We appreciate your support. Be safe out there and we'll see you soon.
They've taken the lunch money from South Africa.